Tonight on Circle A Radio, we'll be discussing the case of the Gina Six. We'll also be speaking to Kevin Fuller and Alpha Tesema of the Portland Perspective Gents Club, an organization that provides African-centered, spiritually grounded rites of passage for African-American males. On September 20th, 2007, a community vigil was organized by the Gents in Portland to coincide with others around the country to support the Gina Six and to raise awareness about the case. Several hundred supporters gathered at the Bethel African Methodist Church. Stay tuned for Circle A Radio.
The Gina Six refers to a group of six black teenagers who have been charged with the beating of a white teenager at Gina High School in Gina, Louisiana, on December 4th, 2006.
At Gina High School, about 10% of enrolled students are black, and more than 85% are white. According to early reports, black students typically sat on bleachers near the auditorium, while white students sat under a large tree, referred to as the White Tree, in the center of the school courtyard.
A school assembly was held on August 31st, 2006. According to media reports, a black male freshman student asked the principal whether he could sit under the, quote, white tree. The principal told the students they could sit, quote, wherever they wanted. The following morning, nooses were discovered hanging from the tree. According to the Gina Times, the nooses were removed by 7:15 a.m. after school officials were informed. The school disciplinary process which followed is unclear. It has been reported that Gina's principal learned that three white students were responsible and recommended expulsion, that the Board of Education overruled his recommendation, and that the LaSalle Parish School superintendent agreed with the overruling. It was initially reported that the punishment was reduced to 3 days of in-school suspension.
The school superintendent was quoted as saying, "Adolescents play pranks. I don't think it was a threat against anybody." Black residents of Gina have stated that this decision stoked racial tensions, in their view, leading to the subsequent events.
The school later had the tree cut down.
Police were called to the school several times in the days after the noose incident in response to a rash of interracial fights between students. The principal took action by calling an impromptu assembly on September 6, 2006, in which students segregated themselves into white and black sections. The Gina Police Department asked LaSalle Parish District Attorney J. Reed Walters to attend and speak at the assembly. Allegedly, Walters was unhappy with the request and, upon arrival, felt that the students were not paying proper attention to him. And he stated that, quote, "With one stroke of my pen, I can make your life disappear." Though black students state Walters was looking at them when he made those comments, Walters and school board member Billy Fowler, also present, deny it.
On September 10th, 2006, black students and their parents attempted to address the school board concerning the recent events, but were refused because the board was of the opinion that the noose incident had been adequately resolved.
On November 30th, 2006, a wing of the main building of the high school was set on fire. While arson was determined to be the cause, the arsonists have never been identified. On Friday, December 1st, there was a party at the Gina Fair Barn. Casepla Bailey, mother of Robert Bailey Jr., one of the Gina Six.
My son, Robert Bailey, him and some friends had gone to a party at the Gina Fair Barn, and he asked to enter the party if it would be okay for them to come in. And he said the lady responded as, sure, you know, as long as there be no fighting. So once he did enter the building, a gentleman asked him what was his name. He told him Robert Bailey. And Justin Sloan hit him, as well as his sister Jessie Sloan. And from there, he was attacked by several white men in the Fair Barn. After the incident happened, his other friends came in to assist him. And once the police got there, the police told the black kids that they needed to get back to their side of town.
Justin Sloan, a white male, was charged with simple battery for his role in the fight and was put on probation. On Saturday, December 2nd, another fight occurred at a local convenience store.
The following day, where Robert and two of his friends, Theo Shaw and Ryan Simmons, were going to Gotta Go Grocery. And once they got there, they see Matt Windham, who is a man, not a student at Gina High School. And Matt Windham, I guess they come upon each other because Matt Windham was involved the previous night with the white gentleman that beat my son at the Fair Barn. You know, Matt ran to his truck, from my understanding, pulled a shotgun, a sawed-off shotgun with a pistol grip, and my son wrestled with him to get the gun from him, and the other two gentlemen proceeded into fight, and they took the gun from him and left the scene running.
On December 4th, 2006, 17-year-old Justin Barker, a white Jenna High School student, was assaulted at school. He was struck on the back of the head and knocked down by a black student. According to some witnesses, a group of black students then repeatedly kicked him. Barker was left unconscious. He was released from the hospital after 2 hours of treatment and observation for a concussion and an eye that had swollen shut.
The police arrested the six students, eventually dubbed the Genus Six. Five of them, Robert Bailey Jr., Michael Bell, Carwin Jones, Bryant Purvis, and Theo Shaw, were charged with attempted second-degree murder. The sixth student, Jesse Ray Beard, was charged as a juvenile because he was 14 at the time. Michael Bell, a juvenile at the time of the incident, was charged as an adult. The district attorney has stated that he did so due to Bell's criminal record and because he believed Bell initiated the attack. However, Coach Benji Lewis, the only adult witness to the incident, didn't place Bell in the attack and stated that another student was the initial attacker. Lewis was never called to testify in Bell's trial.
A 6-member all-white jury found Bell guilty, and he faced the possibility of up to 22 years in prison. On September 14, 2007, Louisiana's Third Circuit Court of Appeals overturned Bell's battery conviction, also ruling that he shouldn't have been tried as an adult. On September 26, 2007, Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco announced that the prosecution would not appeal the appellate ruling, but would try Bell as a juvenile. And on September 27th, Bell was released on $45,000 bond.
On September 4th, 2007, charges against Carwin Jones and Theo Shaw were reduced to aggravated second-degree battery and conspiracy, as were those of Robert Bailey Jr. on September 10th. Despite the overruling of Michael Bell's conviction, the charges against the other four teenagers remained unaffected because they were over 17 at the time of the incident, thus making them adults under Louisiana law.
You are listening to Circle A Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Tonight on Circle A Radio, we are discussing the Gina 6.
I'm Alpha Tesema. Go to Jesuit High School. I'm a junior, 16 years old.
I'm Kevin Fuller, Executive Director of the Bridge Builders. I became familiar with the Gina 6 case through Black Talk Radio, Tom Joyner, Michael Basden, morning shows. And after that, I went on the internet, and then I began to read a lot of the information that was being sent and transmitted as they were forming the march that was to occur in Gina, Louisiana on September 20th.
I heard about it through my director, the director of the Prospective Gents Club, Mr. Kevin Fuller. We have Monday night sessions, and we meet at University of Portland. And for our rap session, Kiawandugu, we come together and we discuss what's going on or things that we can do or study. So that evening, he introduced those of us who didn't know about it, about this Gina 6 issue. That was the first time I heard about it.
The Bridge Builders for the past 2 years have had a theme of a candle in the dark. And that concept came from Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, who happened to be the mentor to Dr. Martin Luther King when he was a student at Morehouse College. The concept of a candle in the dark is motivating and encouraging people to illuminate flames of hope in dark situations. And so for the past 2 years, the Prospective Gents Club have been looking at areas of darkness. So we use that concept for the Gina 6 situation as Color of Change was challenging people in different cities to have different events to bring light to the situation. So the concept of the candle in the dark vigil came from a mission that the Prospective Gents were already charged with. And then it ended with a peace walk where they took about a 1 mile trek up and down Martin Luther King, which was appropriate because we were using Dr. King's quotes for much of the ceremony. the young people, when I shared the information with them on Monday and was telling them about the march on Thursday, the question was, what could we do here, being that we can't get there quickly? So we waited to see if there was going to be an adult organization that was going to call the community together. And that call did not come. So the young people then decided that they would give it a try. There were about 300 people at the event, and we collected about $1,500 to send to the defense fund. But it really served as sort of a beginning for the prospective gents to realize that they could have impact. And if within 72 hours they could get the community to come out, they figured that they could probably do more if they had more time to plan.
I wasn't able to attend the vigil. I was sick on the evening that happened. But prior to that, I went to school and told all my friends, all the kids that I knew. A lot of people just had no idea of what happened or had heard about it and just heard about the part how six black kids beat up a white kid. I had a little article that Mr. Fuller printed off for us and handed out at our Monday session that was about the Genus 6. I had it with me at school when I walked around and talked to, you know, kids in the hallway, and people said, oh yeah, I heard about that. And then I was wearing all black, and people were saying, why are you wearing all black? And I told them it's to support the Genus 6, and a lot of kids said, well, why are you supporting the kids that just beat up this white kid? And I explained to them, you know, that it was much deeper than just six black kids beating up a white kid. It was more of the series of events that occurred prior to that. It's not justifying them beating up the white kid. I think that it went both ways. There's more information that someone has to look at before they judge the situation. But I did talk to my aunt. My aunt made it out, and so she attended for me.
Unfortunately, living in Oregon, the main newspaper is not really covering the event. What Prospective Gent Alpha described as far as the story starting on December 4th when the fight occurred on the schoolyard gives people the wrong impression of what the demonstration is about. So it was important for those guys to have a dialogue about the situation. So when I went on internet, I then went to the Alexandria newspaper, which is the closest city to Gina, to get a history of how it was covered going all the way back to last August. Also looked at some of the footage from broadcast media in Louisiana to get that information. And the piece that the young people are responding to is the fact that justice hasn't been equally applied. There were adults who physically attacked young people and didn't have to serve any time. Going back to Dr. King's quote that justice too long delayed is justice too long denied, is the fact that this kid has been in an adult prison in Louisiana since last December. And it's time for somebody to tell black boys in particular that you can be a kid, and as adults, we'll handle adult problems. But they don't see enough signs of that, not only with Gina, but even if you look locally, if you were to look at the discipline infractions for students in schools here, is disproportionate when you look at the number of African-American males who have been expelled or suspended. And then other students can do some of the very same things, but they have the privilege of being a child and adults recognizing it was just a prank. So what do I mean? To give you an example, you hear every year about pranks that students do at Wilson High School for graduation. They may bring a cow in the school, or one time they had a Mercedes in the swimming pool. Those sorts of graduation pranks. A young person at Grant High School who was part of the Prospective Gents Club, African American male, was around and they lit some fireworks. He was expelled from school because he was the one that they could identify that was part of the group. So it's not just in Gina where young people are seeing that rules are different for different people. And so this was an opportunity for them to give voice to some of the experiences that they were having. Monday night when we met and we said that we may have this event, the young people in small groups wrote down names of people who they would like to invite to be speakers. Because we're a rites of passage program, we deal a lot with rituals and themes. And so they took the six and said that we'd invite six speakers to speak for 6 minutes on one of the different six symbols that we use to teach the Genus Six story. So that is how we arrived there, and that was how the conversation was fueled as they thought about their own experiences and times that they felt like they had been treated unjustly, but couldn't give it voice and didn't know how to explain it, because there was a piece of it that they were accountable for. Yes, I was around and I knew that they were going to light fireworks in the school, but I didn't know that that would result in me being expelled from school. It was just a prank. We were just having fun. I wasn't trying to hurt anybody. So, I mean, the kid had arson charges, and I mean, it was really deep what happened.
Again, this is Alpha Tissema.
When I talk to the kids, I mean, specifically white kids, I guess the overall thing when they read the article was, well, like, the whole town is messed up. They're all crazy. Like, all the people are crazy. I mean, there's this idea that you just want to, specifically coming from the white kids, they just want to push it on the side and they're all crazy. Forget about that. And it's far away. It's all the way in Louisiana. So why do we have to worry about that? Why do we have to waste our time? That's kind of what I saw.
And in contrast, what about the other African-American kids?
Oh, everyone got mad. Oh, especially when I told them about the nooses. Everyone was just fired up. But no one that I told at my school went to the vigil. I think because, you know, a lot of kids were like, oh yeah, I got practice or I got homework. They were offended when I told them about it. But then again, they're putting ahead going to practice or, you know, staying after school for some activity. That hurt me to see that they weren't going to go just because I think they had that going to Jesuit. I guess that idea of forget about it, it's cool, everything's fine here, why do we have to worry about that, kind of rubbed off on them. I can also tell you about how it is in Beaverton, like at the public schools too. At, you know, a predominantly white high school, when you're a black kid, you deal with a lot of stuff. Like, if you focus on your work and if you show an interest in your classes, white kids will just be like, well, you're a fake black person. You know, you're not really black. You know what I'm saying? They mistake hood personality or, like, gangster rap or, like, you know, forget about school and, like, play sports or something like that. They think that that's just a black thing. A lot of kids buy into that. Like at Jesuit, you got to knuckle down on your work or else, I mean, there's tuition you got to pay to go there. It's a private school. If you're not there to learn, you don't even have to go there. So at Jesuit, it's a little different. But at the public schools, I'd say it's a lot worse because you got these kids that are just, all the girls love them. They're athlete, you know, especially if they're like a good athlete, like big buff kids or whatever. They got all the girls. They got all their friends like, dude, you're so tight. You know, it's such a baller. You're such a G, you know, stuff like that. You hear that a lot. The idea is if you just forget about your schoolwork and you just play sports, work out all the time, everyone is going to love you. That'll take you only so far, because what if you get injured in college? What if, you know, something happens and you never focus in school, so you don't know what's going on if you want to get into the, you know, the business world and, like, start working? If you have, on the other hand, you know, knuckle down on your schoolwork, focus on things that matter, that doesn't get you the glory. That's what I've seen. And I have a lot of friends that go to other schools and it's not working. It's not going good for them. You know, walk into a classroom and, like, you know, everyone already knows, like, oh yeah, you're black. It's like, whoa, he's cool. He's you know, he's probably, like, he might know some people in the gang or something that might get me if I, like, say something to him. I mean, that's kind of cool because no one really messes with me, but for real, that's not good because if you buy into that, then it's just destroying your life. So the Gents program is great. Bridge builders are great. It really, like, for anyone coming from any type of school, if you go to a school that's, you know, equal number of blacks and whites, or, you know, you come from predominantly white school, it's really important. A lot of the stuff that we learn in the Gents is very essential to becoming a man.
Again, this is Kevin Fuller.
As an educator, I specialize in how boys learn. I took the Genus Six story and used six symbols and had the young people to connect the dots. And the first symbol began with the tree so that they understood the chronological order of the story. So the first symbol was the tree, then it moved to the fire, then it moved to the gun, then it moved to the gloves, which indicated the fight, and then the final part was the bell, and the bell was Michael Bell's last name, but it also was representative of the Liberty Bell and justice. For each one of the symbols, we asked someone to speak, and they all did an outstanding job of making that symbol relevant to the candle in the dark, because there has to be hope in it somewhere. So I can remember Antoinette, who's a senior at Grant High School, was one of the speakers, and it was great to have student speakers. And her symbol was the tree. Her entire presentation was about how deep our roots are and how wide branches spread, and that branches can reach down to pick up, and branches can withstand strong winds, and they change with the seasons. But each time it changes for a purpose. And so she talked about the purpose that each of us can have in making the world a better place. And so that is how each of our speakers connected the story of Gina Six to action and what we can do now. So the prospective gents are focusing on those very same symbols, but putting a lot of attention on the bell, and that is the Liberty Bell with hope for all people who live in this nation.
Again, this is Kevin Fuller, the Executive Director of the Bridge Builders Program, and Alpha Tasema, a member of the Prospective Gents.
So the Prospective Gents Club, it's a rites of passage program to elevate the African-American male to the status of true manhood by submitting to an African-centered, spiritual-grounded, character-building rites of passage program that promotes scholarship, entrepreneurship, and community building. To get in, we have a gents call, and people who have heard about it or are interested in being in it come, and we give a presentation. And every Monday evening, we go to University of Portland. They have an academic mentoring program for students at the school who are aspiring teachers. They have, like, lesson plans for us, and then after that, we meet. It's a more serious part of the evening. That's basically our Monday night session. During the spring, we tour. And we go see historically black colleges, universities, or historical sites. Last year, I was on the tour. We went to Virginia and North Carolina. And then we also put on, like, a step show that funds the tours. And it's just really fun. We have a lot of teams that come from Washington, Oregon, and they just show their stuff, so it's cool. Mr. Fuller can go in more depth. I just kind of scratched the surface.
We believe that is important as young people are developing who they are, that there's a process for them to help them to understand who it is they are and who it is that they are becoming. That is the general purpose of the Rites of Passage program. We want the young people to take on a positive identity ethnically, racially, and with their gender without creating the definitions of what that means. As African American males, we find that if we have a gift that is outside of music or athletics, it's a 98% chance that that gift won't be discovered, because those are the areas that people focus on with African American males. So we want the young people in our program to understand that they too may be Beethoven. They too may be a writer, that they too may be like Reginald Lewis. Not everybody's gifts and talents are going to lie within athletics and music. So a lot of people come to discover. Other people come to celebrate. But the key thing that they have in common is that they all have an interest in being able to understand the African-American experience in the United States and a safe place to discuss things that are happening. Two of the guys talked about on Thursday, when they wore all black to school, the number of times they were asked if they were in a gang. They have this undue burden of proving and showing that every time you see a group of black men, it's not for something negative. If it's off an athletic field, Alpha had the opportunity last year to meet with one of the men from the Greensboro Four, that started the sit-in movement in North Carolina. When we were in North Carolina, we went to that Woolworth building where the movement started, and the guys actually followed the Peace Walk, and this is where we got the idea for the Peace Walk, from North Carolina A&T State University, where they were freshmen, to the Woolworth store, where they then, you know, did their act. And he had talked to them about how they had made that walk in silence and why, and because they didn't want to talk themselves out of what they were about to do, so they just didn't talk at all. We take some of those concepts that we learn when we visit these places and meet these people and make it relevant to the everydayness that the young people are experiencing. One of the men from the Greensboro Four, they had asked him if he was afraid when he was going through the sit-in movement. He said, of course I was. And they said, then why did you do it? He said, it was my down payment on manhood. So that has become the unofficial motto of the Prospective Gents Club, that what I sacrifice today and what I do to put school first, what I do sometimes to give up hanging out with friends to do a community service project, all of this is my down payment on manhood. And so if you want to become, then you have to do the work. We're not an organization where anybody is hired. I'm completely volunteer, and so is everybody who works with the program, because we want our young people to see that though you have responsibility of family, your job, it does not free you from your responsibility of taking care of your community. Now, there are some folks who have to be paid. We have to pay our firemen. We have to pay our policemen. But do we have to have a campaign to help adults see that you should be engaged in dialogue with young people? When you walk past young people, be it on the street, be it in the mall, you shouldn't treat them like they're invisible and not speak to them at all. You should have dialogue. You should ask them about their dreams and aspirations. Those are roles that adults have forgotten, and thus young people have absolutely no trust in any adults nowadays, which is really a crime, because how can we then move forward if we're not even in communication? I am 41. I was born in 1966. It was in 1972 that Judge Garrity sent down the order of mandatory busing in the schools, because the 1954 decision of Brown versus the Board of Education was taking too long. Portland saw what was happening in Boston, saw the violence and the resistance of doing cross-town busing, where the white students had to go into black areas and the black students had to go into white areas for school. So Portland wanted to avoid that. So what they did was that they moved forward and then bused African-American kids from North and Northeast Portland to Lake Oswego, to Southwest Portland, Southeast Portland, and different areas. So when I was in the fourth grade, I was moved to schools in Lake Oswego from Northeast Portland. It was not the most positive experience, but a lot of people who are my age had that experience. So people who are my age now have kids who are in high school. And so when kids are coming home and talking about being treated unfairly, being treated unjust, parents now have a different attitude than our parents had, because they're saying, oh, I believe you, because that was the experience I had when I was in school. Finally, my mom fought to get me pulled out of the busing system. When I was in the eighth grade, I was allowed to go back to my neighborhood school. But what was interesting is that I went to a school where about 70% of the senior class goes to a four-year school. And in my graduating class, though the school is 25% African-American, only four African-American males were going to a four-year school. And it became more of an issue once I got to college, and I'm sitting around these friends I'm meeting from Chicago and Philadelphia and L.A., and they're saying, next weekend, do you want to go over to USC? I have a couple friends from high school who go there. And I didn't have those sorts of connections except for the other three guys. And I just made a promise to myself that when I graduated from Arizona State University, I would go back to Portland. And what I would do is I would be the type of person to help other black boys realize the importance and the fun of going to college and how to get there. And because African-American males, particularly those who are not star athletes, are ignored by so many people, nobody really wants to be bothered with that population, we decided that it really makes a difference in their lives to have that type of experience. And like I said, they have to have a vehicle and a place to talk about their everydayness. What are the things going on with them? How does it feel? And They want to know, how do we deal with those sorts of things?
Again, Alpha Tasema, a member of the Perspective Gents.
This is Oregon, so it's a lot different from other parts of the country. I think that overall, specifically in Beaverton, at my school, you have a lot of different types of kids. There's like about 40 African-American students out of 1,600. So that's not a lot. And then overall, like ethnic diversity, there's around 10%. There's not a lot of us. You have a lot of kids that have never interacted with black kids, African-American kids. There's a different type of relationship for, you know, different types of people. So I guess there's this idea that, you know, like the black kids are cool because, you know, rap is really cool right now. Hip-hop is in. Being black is in at my school. And then also, you know, the sports, the athletics. We have number one ranked athletic program in the nation on Sports Illustrated. There's also this idea that all the black kids are here to play sports. Me personally, I play football, but I did not like get recruited to play football or anything. And I'm not like, I mean, I'm good at football and I love the game, but it's not something that I'm looking to go to college and play. I'm a student. That's my full-time job. That's my main focus. Get good grades, you know, extracurricular activities. I'm on student government. I'm kind of like the odd one. So a lot of kids, when they see me, when they know me, it's like, I don't fit into that stereotype. So that is my experience with, I guess, white kids or white people at Jesuit. But overall, there's interracial relationships. I mean, there's no really segregation. But, you know, a lot of the black kids, we like hang out, you know, we have a table at lunch that we kind of sit at, but, you know, there's just white kids there too. At times, there's some questionable things that happen at school that you might think, you know, I was kind of offended by that, but the whole thing, like at Jesuit, since most of your friends are going to be white, if you know, like act up or go crazy, I mean, basically you won't have any friends. So there's a lot of times I hear, you know, kids would say something like really racist and they'd just be like, oh man, I'm just joking. These are your friends. I'm just kidding. You know, I didn't mean it like that. So when you act up and get mad, people are like, whoa, you're overreacting. Like, are you serious, man? I'm like, I thought we were just cool. We were just joking around. That personally makes me mad when things like that happen. And I guess you could tie that into what happened in Gina High School. You know, it was just a joke. We weren't serious. But that happens a lot specifically. So that is something to struggle with being a minority student at, you know, a predominantly white high school.
Kevin Fuller.
I think about the principal of Gina High School, who the students went to and asked, can I sit under the white tree? And he says, you can sit wherever you want to sit. And so the students then took him up on it and sat where they wanted to sit. And then they came to school the next day and three nooses were hanging. And the principal's response was to suspend the students immediately with the recommendation for expulsion. Okay? That is how the principal responded to it. That was overturned by the school board and the superintendent. So imagine not only the messages sent to the students, but imagine the message sent to this professional who wants to run a school, who appears to have all of the image of justice and treating everybody fairly that one should have, but being told how to make that happen. And it is interesting that the tree is gone. So when you see pictures of a tree at Gina, there's a sign that says, this is not the real tree. They've cut it down. They use the wood for firewood. And it is a symbol that I think at the end of the story, that you would want to go back to. If you even read the word, it says the first shall be last and the last shall be first. At the end, you want to go back to the beginning to always remember, because that could have served as a symbol for a lot of things. So I'm not sure if the tree was cut down because they say, well, now nobody can sit under it, or if the tree was cut down so that if anybody comes to Gina, they don't have a visual or an image. It is very interesting that symbol is now gone.
First of all, the issue of justice that is going on, awareness, and the full story of what happened.
Once people have become aware, we have to act. Just having the information and saying, wow, that's a horrible thing, is a good start. But people have to act. And ways that we can act is by calling Governor Blanco and reminding her of the support that we gave Louisiana as a nation in the aftermath of Katrina. We can send money to the defense funds. We're still collecting money. We're going to pay attention to the case and what is happening, because there are always updates. And I recommend that you get a national newspaper so that you can keep up with what is going on, or log into one of the Louisiana local papers online to follow it, because unfortunately the Oregonian has not been keeping up with the case very well. But I think the greatest act of courage would be to right the wrongs here locally. We talked a lot about the disparity in discipline, in who gets into AP courses and who does not, who's assigned to special ed. Why are Jefferson High School and Grant High School so close yet so far apart? What are the disparities here in our own communities? And each of us, just like the prospective gents and the eminent ladies of virtue, have a purpose in life. And so whatever it is that purpose is, that we discover what that purpose is and make sure that justice is served in that area. So if we're into the arts, then let's be sure that we're equitable with opportunities in the arts. And let's make sure we're inviting people into what we do, because some people have absolutely no idea that they would love opera until they went. So whatever it is that is our passion, we need to be sure that we're inviting other people and opening the door so that people can see what we can do. And we are dedicated to that. If we are dedicated to making sure that the young people in our own local community are treated fairly, are treated justly, then we are promoting justice and learning from the Gina Six situation. Alpha Tasema is a wonderful, wonderful young person and an example of what we're trying to get young people to become. And it's not because of his experiences through the Prospective Gents Club, but it's because of how he every day looks at life and situations that are happening. He gives people the chances and the opportunities, and he is in a very supportive environment. And so we need to create more huts of security for young people so that we can create more young people who are as confident as this young person is. There are some very incredible young people who are around in our local community, and we need to find ways to rally behind those young people. And I did want to say that before we close, that we have some outstanding young people here, and we need to find ways as adults to support them and to continue to grow them.
For more information on the Gina Six, you can go to www.colorofchange.org or freethegina6.org. Other attendees at the Gina Six support rally include white supremacists David Duke and Richard Barrett. Barrett is the leader of the white supremacist group, the Nationalist Movement. He was there to protest the demonstrators. Former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke has publicly given support for Gina's white residents. This Saturday, October 6th, there is a community gathering and rally against racism at Lentz Park, located at Southeast 92nd and Holgate. The Hammerskin Nation, a racist skinhead gang, aims to celebrate its 20th anniversary at a location in the greater Portland area from October 5th through 7th. The Hammerskin's primary focus is the production and promotion of white power music, also known as Rock Against Communism. Many of its members have been convicted of harassing, assaulting, and murdering non-whites. The Hammerskins were at one time considered the United States' most well-organized racist skinhead group, but power struggles have split the group into several factions, some of which are now defunct. The Hammerskins are organizing their event alongside Volksfront, a group that was founded in 1994 in the Oregon State Penitentiary by Randall Krager. For more information on this gathering, or to report racist and fascist activity in your area, contact the Ad Hoc Committee Against Racism and Fascism, 971-285-4688, or at fight_them_back@riseup.net. Thank you for listening to Circle A Radio. We'd like to express our appreciation to Kevin Fuller and Alpha Tasema, to Democracy Now!, and to Flowing Farm and David Reyes for their instrumentals. Circle A Radio airs every first and third Wednesday at your community radio station, KBOO, in Portland. And we can be reached at circlearadio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.